listening to the Peaceful Planet Synthesized from Spirit through the mediumship of Robert Murray. Listen in to the Peaceful Planet every Saturday at 12 noon Central to music from the angelic realms, including inspired songs from John Lennon, George Harrison, and Michael and the Band. This is show host Marcia McMahon inviting you to join us as we share messages from the Ascended Masters and the Archangels as we bring you into a higher vibration of love and peace for the planet. Hear my weekly interviews with cutting-edge world teachers and musical talent.
Do you like music, angels, and channeling? Are you spiritual, a psychic, or a healer? We are one on the Peaceful Planet show at www.bbsradio.com every Saturday at 12 noon Central Time.
Welcome, everyone, to the Peaceful Planet Show. This is your host, Marcia McMahon, coming to you from the BDS studios. And you were listening to Passing Through Botswana. Our special music is being inspired from the other side. And this one was written by Bob Murray as inspired from the great George Harrison. We also bring you messages and music from George and John weekly on our program, and I'm going to be reading one of those messages in a moment. But while we're not getting to our guest right at the moment, I am so honored to bring forth a wonderful guest today, John J. Harper, who has written the wonderful book titled Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. And I want to encourage all of you listeners right now to go to station one, and it'll say about this program, and you click on that link, and that will bring up his website, his book, And you can be reading all about that while you're tuning in to some of my announcements and some of my readings at the start of the show. So we are so thrilled to have him because he's done so much amazing work and compiled a book that I think explains why so many of us are tuning in to higher consciousness, tuning in to being able to use our intuition fully, and what the 2012 event may all be about and how that connects on a microscopic level to our DNA and a macrocosmic level to galactic center and ascension. So it's just going to be a thrilling show. Stay tuned with us and click on that link right now, all about his site, and you can reach his site at johnjharper.com. So please feel free to click on that right now. So, John, I'm going to be getting to your work in just a moment, and I have a couple of things I want to run past our audience before I do, but it's so nice to connect with you today.
Thank you so very much, Marcia. It's just a pleasure for me to be here with you and your audience.
Well, it's wonderful to finally have you on our show. Your work is fabulous. So before I get into that, I have a couple announcements. We are still linking to my book, With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts. And if you would like to pick up the book at a discounted rate, it is A Tool for Peace in the Middle East. And I would encourage you to do that at www.dianaspeakstotheworld.com. And also my readings with the Archangels, which you can pick up on the site if you go to the site index. And I want to also mention to our listening audience that I would like to send out prayers of light and love to Tibet right now, which is undergoing severe persecution as the people in Tibet strive to bring democracy and order and stability to that area of the world. And we want to send out our blessings and love, particularly to the Dalai Lama, and ask that no more violence be done on the part of the demonstrators or on the part of the Chinese military that is in there now, suppressing this situation and causing such havoc. So we pray for peace for both sides, and we ask our listeners to join us in this meditation for them. And as well, I'd like to bring you another update from John Lennon from the spirit side. As most of you know, we are highlighting the music of Bob Murray, and you can hear his music online at www.thestarsstillshine.com. It's a wonderful website. And Bob and I both share a connection to John Lennon. And while we are not producing this music for money, we are producing it to bring peace to the planet and oneness. And I have a wonderful brief message from John Lennon that I think all of you will enjoy before we get to our interview. So this is titled John Lennon on the new film, The Walrus. Hello, John. I've had you on my mind all day with the news about the new film called Walrus. John. Yeah, Marcia, my dear, it's something very dear to my heart right now. I wanted to ask you to let me have a few words of thanks to the filmmaker who produced this. It was truly an honor to meet up with him back when Yoko and I were in the hotel in Ontario, Canada, doing our bit for peace. This young man had snuck inside the hotel and then contrived a false press pass to get to meet me. I treated him like royalty because I feel that each person who feels that strongly about peace is true royalty. The princess and I agree totally on that point, although we may disagree on the means to achieving peace on the planet. My idea is to bring peace through oneness and music, as always. While, of course, Diana's solutions and diplomatic ideas are far more advanced than anything I could possibly imagine. However, with no obvious play on words, or perhaps there is one here, Marcia, my dear, I wish to wish you the best of luck in getting our book published and the attentions of a major publisher. I know it's not the first priority on your long list of publishing endeavors, and there are, of course, more lyrics whenever you're ready to sing along. George says hello and wants to thank you for your hard work and persistence, and this has not been a paying job for the Halfbeats. We do think it will pay royalties in time when you do go big, and that's not very far in your future now. The TV thing will play well in the U.S. and bring you more contacts in publishing and music, We were very happy for you as we all had our turn at fame and recognition for creative endeavor while on the earth plane. Both George and I want to thank you from the depths of our hearts and minds for continuing to look under each unturned stone to get this stone to roll once more. While we do rock and roll the Beatles on your show each week, we want these songs out and sung with gusto and passion to end all wars and return humanity to the peace which she is entitled. May every child sleep in peace each night without threat of bombs and invasion. May each child have peace, food, clothing, and parents. If those of your listeners can manage to send along some money to Africa, George and I would be happy to see that happen. We love you all and our listeners on the peaceful planet and the world at large. This means more to me than you can possibly imagine. Imagine peace. Imagine love. Love ya, John Lennon. So what an uplifting message and what an uplifting program we have planned for you today. So, John, it's wonderful to have you on our show. And if you don't mind, I'm going to read a bit about your bio. And I had phrased it on the webpage about this program. Why would a scientist invite us into trance? And John is going to be sharing with us his experiences in trance and the knowledge that he has gleaned from many outside sources about his conclusions about what we are undergoing. And let me read his brief bio here, and we thank our listeners for your patience. John J. Harper is a retired electronics engineer, computer scientist, and clinical mental health counselor with the U.S. Department of Defense. His formal schooling is in electronics, psychology, and health sciences, and he has worked at such diverse top-secret facilities as the Army Space and Missile Defense Command in Huntsville, Alabama, and the Naval Weapons Center at China Lake in California. Today, he is a researcher, writer, public speaker, and editor-in-chief of Reality Press in California. His focus is on understanding the earth changes we see manifesting now impacting climate, consciousness, and civilization in the solar cycle 24, so that he can help us find creative solutions to them. So, John, what an impressive biography, and what a long way you've come from your origins.
Yeah, amen to that. Yes, I was a very typical left-brain scientist for most of my adult life, and in June 1988, I had a profound experience that, you know, changed me forever because it tapped my third eye, basically, when I saw my deceased friend one morning standing in front of me. And that is the beginning, I guess, of this story where I shifted from my left brain to my right brain, or really to whole brain thinking over time. So in a short way, that's, you know, that's what happened to me.
I think that's a wonderful story. And I think that many of us have come from academic backgrounds. I know I still teach at a university, and I don't go into that much on air because it, you know, psychics are not generally welcome in academia, you know. So
yes, I do know.
I keep that separate, you know. But I think it's very brave of you that you knew that this was a genuine experience from your friend in spirit. It was obviously very heartfelt. And tell us about some of the things that clued you in that made you realize that this was something really genuine and something that you couldn't be making up.
Well, to rewind a bit, then this profound experience that happened to me in June 1988, where I saw my deceased friend stand in front of me, was kind of the apex, or the focal point of what had gone on 20 years prior. I had met my friend George Sebastian Vigay III, a very lofty title name, but a wonderful human being from southern Louisiana, from Plaquemine, Louisiana. He and I met in the Army. We came together in Huntsville, Alabama at Redstone Arsenal, where we were both undergoing preparation for deployment to the West German town of Nuremberg at the time. This is back in the late 60s. And so George and I had been together for about 17 years when he suddenly died in November 1987 of a massive heart attack.
Yeah.
he was a physicist. He was left brain. He was raised Catholic in a very formal way, but he had really lost his faith over time. Became a very left brain scientist. I was very left brain in the way I approached life, but I was open minded. I had some spiritual experiences as a child, even though I did not participate in formal religion. I knew there was a greater something out there. I knew there was an intelligence, a presence in my life and in nature itself that I respected and always tried to tune into. So I had that going for me, but to really get to the heart of your question, how did I know this was a real experience versus an hallucination, an illusion? Mm-hmm. George, when he died in 1987, it was such a trauma to not only his immediate family. He was married. He had two daughters. His wife and my wife had become friends back in the Army days. We both had a couple girls about the same age. So we were a tight-knit kind of group there for a number of years. So when George died suddenly, it threw me into a real grief cycle, and I asked to be transferred from the Army Missile Command in Huntsville, Alabama, to my hometown area of the Seattle area with the Navy. And this came through very quickly. That was kind of shocking in itself. There was a lot of energy going into this transformation, this transition back to the Pacific Northwest where I was born and raised. So in itself, on hindsight, I realized I was being set up, you might say, to receive this great revelation, this energetic manifestation of my deceased friend who I realized did not die. And when I saw him in my master bedroom 4 o'clock in the morning in June 1988, I had just started to come from what I thought was a lucid dream. And my wife was sound asleep next to me, and I kind of raised up trying to shake my head, the cobwebs out of my head, to see what was going on, because it started as what I thought as a lucid dream, very clear, very powerful. It was the image of my deceased friend standing there, and I kind of just raised up and I started looking more intensely in the space that was transforming in front of me. It was a light transition that I couldn't reconcile in my mind. But what was happening there was a holographic image of my friend, and he looked at me and he smiled, and it was just such an intense connection. It was a telepathic connection. So that, in a snippet form, is why I knew that it was real, because it connected with me at the heart level. It was just not an intellectual, experience.
That is a wonderful way that you described it in the book, and I couldn't put the book down. It was just riveting the way you transition from one topic to another and you're integrating so many aspects of science and cosmology with the DNA and with other things too. But that's a wonderful description of your first vision from spirit. I know I sometimes get visions, but my visions from spirit are all more like an imprint in my mind. I don't actually see anything, and I don't actually hear anything, even though I'm a clairaudient channel. So how about that? You know, you got to fine-tune that sixth sense, though, to get
good at it.
Have to recognize the authenticity of it when it kind of hits you over the head, as this did. This was kind of the old classic 2x4 over the head sort of experience for you that opened you. And my, oh my, thank goodness that happened. It was like spirit had kind of been planning that so that you could do this wonderful work.
Well, I think that's very true, Marcia. When I look back again, hindsight being 20/20, and I think the goal of life now is for foresight to be 20/20 as well, and that means the opening of our third eye. And what I've understood from my experience was that the trauma and the grief cycle and the strain that I was under for about a 5 or 6 month period after my friend George died was actually setting up the chemistry, the physiology, and the neural networks, if you will, and really opening DNA in a new way. You know, that 97% they claim is junk DNA, I've got news for folks, that's no junk. God don't make
Absolutely.
Junk.
And that's so right.
And so what I realized over a certain period of time of doing research in all these areas that you have spoken to, I realized that the reason we see visually at times and other times we just feel or sense, you know, our sixth sense versus our second sight, as I say, it's an energetic phenomenon. Most of us don't thank God, are not under the kind of strain that I was under as both a senior engineer scientist who had gone through a very profound metaphysical experience and trying day to day to throw it away, to put it out of my mind so I could do my job in the Defense Department. That put me under a tremendous conflict of interest. That was a great paradox, physicists kind of by day and metaphysicists by night. And I realized that all played into my particular scenario.
And I think that really helps you integrate so beautifully your background with the traditional scientific mind and the intuitive mind and all of what you've put forth here, and why those of us that are more left brain need to tune in and need to frequent this plane that is non-physical and learn, because there's so many changes upon us and upon the planet at this time. And we are raising our vibration into what we call Christ consciousness. And, it's amazing to me, John, how organized religion, almost all of them, and how science and so many of these various disciplines that we, revere and respect have not got it right about the 2012 event. And what is really going on is something that each of us have to do within our own heart.
Yes. And the other thing, the great disconnect in science, between science and religion, and in fact within science and within religion, is this idea of the apocalypse, this idea of an end date that is going to end it all. And, scientists can call it the big crunch and put it out billions of years, and religion can say it's, a few years or a few decades from now and call it the end of time or the study of eschatology. But they're talking about a concept that is unknown in the metaphysics realm. There is no beginning and there is no end to time, because time is a circle, it's not a line.
Right.
And if people understand that clocks and calendars and seasons are trying to tell us something, they go round and round and round. Okay, they do not start at the past and go to the future through a moment called the present. There is only the eternal now. There's the moment of now. And Einstein said it best. He said, for physicists, time is an illusion, because the arrow of time can go into the past or into the future, but it always has to come through the present moment to be understood. So what I realized from recovering that ancient knowledge, the Egyptians had it, the Mayans had it, and others, Native Americans, have it. They their teepees in the round, they pitch their camp in a circle, they have the circle fire, campfire. All these things are speaking to us symbolically that we're not going to run out of time. What we're doing is falling into eternity. And what that means specifically is the 2012 is a strange attractor. It's a time, a date, that in itself has no meaning, except all the stars are aligning in a way, and the Earth is moving into a center point alignment with the axis of the Sun and the ecliptic of the Milky Way galaxy.
Exactly.
That is allowing more life force energy, more magnetic field energy, more plasma, if you will. The fourth state of matter is plasma. We are made of this plasma. One of the things, Marcia, I learned from seeing my friend George, his body was, I would say, like liquid mercury. And even though he had a projected clothing over him, he had a Hawaiian luau shirt and a beachcomber hat.
I love that. That is so humorous.
Yeah. I tell you, that blew my mind in itself. It was very comical in its own way, but it was very enlightening, because I saw his body had transformed from a flesh and bone body to kind of a liquid sheen, watery sheen body, a full energetic body. The Buddhists would call it the diamond body, because it did give off tremendous light and it sparkled. But the liquid mercury, this brings us into alchemy, this idea of changing a lesser metal into gold. This took me into this entire new field of understanding the way that the universe works, and it works on ages of metal. We got a four ages in philosophy: the Iron Age, the Bronze Age, the Silver Age, and the Golden Age. We have that for a reason. And my friend George, being very good, evidently, at understanding what was happening to him some 6 months after he, quote, died, he had four metal beer cans flattened in his hat band, in this Hawaiian luau shirt and this beachcomber hat band facade that he had projected over his body. And what I came to realize was he was telling me these four metal beer cans were symbolic of the four ages of metal, of heavy metal.
Oh, wonderful.
That led, it did not come to me at once. This took me a good year to even get the basic ideas down, because that's how, disconnected I was from this. So anyway, the point again, though, to bring it home is that 2012 is about a transformation of the body through DNA, but it's going to be in a way that is so phenomenal, because we're going to become sensitive to everything, even more than we are today, more to sights, to sounds, to smells, as our DNA aligns with this 2012 Milky Way magnetic source point. We're going to feel really crystallized. I mean, we're going to feel more like I kind of liken this to a kaleidoscope, you know, where you look through the telescope with crystal glass and you get these beautiful snowflake patterns. And as you do this, it's like the body tuning itself as a diamond receiver and transmitter of energy. And so I do have moments like this where if I can be perfectly still, I'm in the right frame of mind, I've paid attention to my diet, I've got everything going for the moment for me, I can sense that. I can just, the energy just flows through me, and I can feel this and sense this now. And I realize this is going to lead to the opening of the third eye. I mean, a full opening, kundalini opening of the third eye. And as this progresses, it's going to be phenomenal.
It is going to be phenomenal. And there are these changes going on in our solar system as well as in the Milky Way galaxy. And you talk about that in your book with regard not only to the Mayan calendar, which they call the end of time the 2012 Great Sun Day. And I think that's interesting because I had a message from a higher level group of angels that also referred to the experience as the Great Sun Day. So there's something going on here that's much greater than we can sometimes get our minds around. It's a galactic change, and it's also got to do with the ancient solar calendar. If you would expound on that a little bit. I thought you did some great research on how it all lines up.
Well, the larger idea is there's the fourth state of matter is plasma. You know, there's liquids, solids, and gases, and there's kind of a pre-gaseous state called plasma. For those of us, that don't have a physics background, we can think of the light that's in neon lights, the gaseous compound in neon lights is a plasma. You know, we're talking about plasma televisions now, and, you know, this word is catching on in our vocabulary again. Plasma has to do with the fact that we know now in science, astrophysics, that the universe is not empty. It's full of this pre-something, this pre-gaseous something that we call plasma. Think of it as filaments, real fine wires, if you will, because it is a metallic base or precursor to metals. And what we see now is that this pre-gaseous filament, kind of a taffy, if you will, kind of candy, taffy candy pulled ultra, ultra fine. That is what space is filled with, and it clusters and it in globules and spheres, and it's out there in space. It's also in our atmosphere. It's broken down real fine, but it's in the elements, the hydrogen and oxygen and et cetera. This is very profound, because what it means is that this taffy-like, cotton candy-like, if you will, filaments are constantly spiraling around in empty space that is not empty. And when it forms these galaxies, it cooks this plasma into a hot gas. And this is what we see in the sun, for example. The sun is this plasma, this molten sphere of plasma. And at the core of our Earth, we have this plasma. And within us, we have the plasma, not just blood plasma, but we're talking about the DNA as a liquid crystal semiconductor now. I mean, this is good science. This is biochemistry. But we know that we're made of the same stuff as the universe. So now if we can just take that as the premise, we realize that over cycles, great cycles of time, there's a transformation going on through these four ages of iron, bronze, silver, and gold ages. This means a change in consciousness at each level, means a change in physiology at each level, means determines how long we live in each age, determines how our health and relationship is with nature in each age. So we can see now that these ancients were tracking this through calendars and clock systems that were marked on the autumnal equinox and the vernal equinox, you know, the winter solstices and all this type of thing. We're talking about the four seasons and about these alignments that the Stonehenge, for example, would have aligned to, the pyramids in Egypt would have aligned to. We're talking about cathedrals that have been on sacred sites for hundreds and sometimes a couple thousand years now or more. This is what the ancients were tracking, because it took this energy and basically soaked it up or absorbed it in these structures, in the cathedrals, say Notre Dame or Rennes Chateau or Stonehenge or the pyramids. The idea was,
I'm glad you bring that up, if I may interject.
Go ahead, yes, by all means.
I teach art history, and I always bring that to the awareness of my students, that Stonehenge is an astrological calendar, and that these so-called primitive people had the awareness that the world was round, and they could calculate the solstice, so therefore they knew the distance between the earth and the sun, and they could calculate these approximate dates based on the solar calendar. So I talk about all of that. I talk about the Egyptian pyramids and how they haven't been completely deciphered in terms of modern archaeology by any stretch, and that they do conform more closely to the archaeoastronomy. And then thirdly, of course, the sacred geometry in the Knights Templar, in the Chartres Cathedral, and so many of these other sacred places were other ways of aligning. I totally teach that and agree with that. That's wonderful.
Yes, and for a minute, think of the cathedrals now, the really great grand cathedrals, the Gothic cathedrals, that have these beautiful stained glass windows in them, the sacred geometry that you're referring to, based on the phi ratio or the Nautilus seashell spiral. And so you're in a cathedral, let's say, you're looking at the architecture, and that's telling you the relationship of everything in nature with respect to the sun and the solar system, the other planets, and the Milky Way galaxy. And you're looking at these stained glass windows, and you're seeing that energy transform through the light spectrum. That's going on within our DNA. That DNA is a liquid crystal, just like that stained glass, image in front of us is. Made of a plasma, and all, everything's being illuminated by sunlight. So through photosynthesis is what we're getting at here. Everything is changing from the plant to the planet and everything in between through the solar system and beyond to the sun behind the sun, which is the center of the Milky Way, the ancients told us. So we can see now, to wrap this up in a real quick summary, that what's going on is that this new alignment in 2012 is about running this energy through the sun from the core of the Milky Way, the bulge at the center of the Milky Way, that star system, those hundreds of millions of stars is what we're talking about, that congregate at the center of the Milky Way. There's a huge magnetic field there that's going to be beamed basically through the lens of the sun. The sun is a huge lens in terms of its relationship to the core of the Milky Way. That in turn is changing all the planets within our solar systems, all kinds of phenomenal things going on in other planets, just not Earth. So this is a solar system event.
I totally concur with that.
And what's going on is everything is lighting up, so to speak. There's ice caps melting in other planets, on Mars, etc., as well as ours. And so this energy is coming through resonantly, not like a straight line connection as much as a resonant relationship, the one that you would get when you turn an old TV with an antenna system and kind of move the rabbit ears on it to bring the picture in clear from the transmitter. That's what's going on. The alignment is not like a hardwired, it's a resonant relationship tuned to frequency, to energy. So what's going on? That energy is coming through the planet, then through us, through the animals. We're seeing extinctions of some species, and then others are coming out of nowhere. New species are coming out of the oceans. And what's going on, though, is that we're lighting up. This is literally the Enlightenment. The Age of Enlightenment is about light.
And these solar flares and everything are also occurring, and scientists are studying that, but they're not making much of it. They don't want to say too much because they're harboring fears, I believe, about the solar flares.
They are indeed, and NASA, of course, has made the pronouncement that solar cycle 24, which actually began formally now in January 2008, we got the data in, and we know that in January we entered this new cycle called 24, and that it will peak around 2012, give or take a year or so, but the point is that they've already predicted, some astrophysicists, David Hathaway is one at Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, has gone on record saying he believes that solar flare activity will be more pronounced and more powerful than any time since Galileo looked through a telescope 400 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what that means is probably two things, in my opinion. One is we're going to see tremendous erratic behavior of the sun as it tries to adjust to this beam of light coming from the center of the Milky Way. That will translate to huge Earth changes as well. But the point is, this is not the end of anything. This is the beginning, the rebirth of Earth. And it does look like chaos, because in chaos theory, more chaos always leads to higher order. You cannot get to a higher order system without plummeting it into chaos initially.
So these ancient solar calendars and the knowledge and wisdom of the ancient peoples is actually correct, and they seem to have understood what sometimes eclipses us, if you'll pardon the pun, the truth of what's going on with the sun and the alignment of the planets. You know, you can't dismiss astrology completely, because there is this total galactic alignment going on 2012, December 21st, 2012. A lot of people think it's doom and gloom, the world is going to end. I don't know. You know, there's different, you know, there's different messages that I've gotten about that event, saying that there will be drastic changes to the sun at that point. But, you know, I don't want to induce fear in anyone. I believe, like you do, that this is going to be for positive good, and that we are going to be energized to a new level of existence.
Well, let me put it this way within context, because I always try to walk towards the center line of any kind of data that's not completely understood.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this, you know, I've always been saying for 15 years at least, you know, the message is not doom and gloom, it's that we're being groomed to bloom. But as positive
very
as that message, but as positive as that message is, Marcia, I am not Pollyannish about what is happening right now.
I'm
in the Midwest.
Either.
We got tremendous floods, right? We
yeah.
know that water, in fact, on weighted on ground, for example, in geology, there was a new study released a week ago that says that when we weight down these areas on the fault lines, they will give way. Just like any other object that's broken underneath its basic structure, when you put more weight on, you're going to break it. That depends maybe on the Midwest in terms of the New Madrid fault line outside of St. Louis, Missouri. We could be talking as the sea level rises from glacier melt, we could be talking about the San Andreas fault and every other fault around the Ring of Fire and everywhere else. It is clear to me that the undersea volcanoes are experiencing tremendous strain because
Definitely.
Of this new energy input. You're going to see tremendous volcanic activity both on the surface and underneath the sea that's going to lead to tsunamis, tremendous sea quakes that we're seeing in the Indian Ocean, for example. So let's be real about this. There's phenomenal changes. I love that word phenomenal, because that's the only word that my mind can wrap around all these changes at one
and
time.
And I completely concur with you, and I've had messages from Archangel Michael saying that there would be all kinds of cataclysmic events with volcanoes, and then I have something in here from the hosts of heaven saying Earth trebles, volcanoes explode, a star approaches, and the sun turns black. I mean, you know, bizarre
yes.
stuff is to be anticipated. It's not like it's just going to be Pollyanna and, oh, boy, you know, we're in for a ride. We are in for the ride of a lifetime, but I don't think
yes, we are.
Completely.
The ride of many lifetimes, to be truthful
mm-hmm.
about it.
Yes.
And what's going on? I mean, we've got a lot of theories out there. We've got Planet X and Nibiru and Nemesis, all these ideas of a twin star system. I'm very convinced that's true. Most planets and most sun systems have a twin. This is just the way it is in astrophysics. We're very rare. If we were only to have one sun, this would be extremely rare
mm-hmm.
in the cosmos.
Yeah.
I do not believe that we do. And once you really understand this, as Walter Cruttenden did, who wrote a wonderful book about this and talked about the great year of Plato, etc., but Walter's research in the Binary Institute that I mentioned in my book, you know, it talks about this idea that when we realign with this sun, this secondary sun system, every 24,000 years, now this is not to be confused with the precession of the equinox, which is the wobble of the Earth around its axis in its solar orbit, but this 24,000 years can can be matched to the precession of the equinoxes, the difference between the 24,000 and the 26,000 is the transition period of years, the number of years. Some are hundreds of years between these ages, these four ages. Others are like 92 years, or et cetera, like we are now, I think, in a transition phase to 2012. But not to complicate this further, the point is we're always talking about energy transformations, always, always, always equated personally to your energy, how you feel, how you think. Are you having a clear moment, or are you not? But it's about atmospheric conditions, about solar sun conditions. It's about the center of the Milky Way. If we keep that in mind, we've got to realize we're dealing with tremendous energies that are trying to realign themselves. The sun is 1 million times greater than the mass of the Earth. 1 million Earths can fit into the sun. And several million suns can fit into the center bulge of the Milky Way galaxy alone. We're talking about powerful gyroscopes, powerful magnets.
I have heard that the center of the Milky Way galaxy is now thought to be a black hole. Is that what you feel, or is it just
Well, the theory is, and I think it can be reconciled, one of the reason it's a black hole is because the gravitational field is so strong, again, magnetic, that it's pulling all the light from the outer rim of that hole into the center of itself, and it can't escape. The tenacity of it, the strength of it is so strong that no light can escape. Now, here's an interesting point. The ancients also, especially the shamans, they, as I said in my book, they also saw it in a similar way. However, a black hole is really so full of light that once you're in the center of it, it's a brilliant, I mean beyond brilliant, sphere of light. What do the near-death experiencers see? What do the shamans see? What do some of the mystics see over time? They enter a tunnel, and the light at the end of the tunnel is that center sphere of the Milky Way, according to many, many enlightened folks, as well as the ancient seers of India who saw this in the Vedic literature of India. They talk about this idea of the center of the galaxy being this solar, this huge sun behind the sun, as we say.
What we call it in New Age parlance here among those of us who are channelers is sometimes referred to as galactic center and sometimes referred to as the great central sun. That is
how. Yes.
And the great
yes.
central sun, as it's been explained to me through others who also work with spirit and have sort of a concept of this, is our concept of God. That right
yes.
there.
That's
so,
right. And then
so
Mayan said,
like
Kunak
aligning Kuh. On a spiritual level, not only with light, and we don't know if it's the light of the black hole or the light of the divine creator, but it's like aligning directly with creator and creative mind.
Yes.
That's how I see
exactly.
it. So let's talk again about the minuscule aspects of the DNA. I was fascinated that you brought up the pineal gland and how you connect that to DNA. And Your research is just so vast and so well thought out, and you really did a great job with all your citation, with the numerous websites that you reference and all the authors that you tie together. I mean, it's just really a masterpiece. So I want to encourage our listeners to definitely buy a copy of your book.
Well, thank you. And I did take great care in doing that for one reason. You know, no matter how brilliant we might think one individual is, we always look and say, well, that's one opinion. And I realized
yeah.
that no matter how well I can explain this to another person, it's only one man's opinion, right? But if I can tie all these ideas together hundreds and hundreds of times and in many, many different disciplines, somebody's got to wake up and say, whoa, this is no longer coincidental. This really is a pattern that holds water, so to speak. So that's why I did it. That was the rationale, and I thank you for that comment. But the DNA molecule, again, is a liquid crystal. It does not die when we die. It merely shifts into this fourth state of matter called plasma. Now, one of the things that really blew my mind, if you look at DNA research, it shows that you cannot see DNA with the naked eye. Wait a minute. You mean my eye was made from DNA that the eye cannot see? What's going on here? And so that DNA is in a hyperdimension. It's in the fifth dimension of light, in the fourth state of matter or plasma. That was my first great revelation, Marcia. I realized that we were made from light energy that is like a laser beam that's shining trillions of DNA molecules and trillions of cells are shining their light at each other, so to speak, and projecting the physical form into three dimensions, into our physical form.
That's
so we are a hologram of light.
And you are just making one eloquent statement after another. That is so eloquent. Could you say that again for our listeners?
The idea that really should rock us and blow our mind, or actually our third eye wide open, is the idea that we're made of a something, a DNA molecule that cannot be seen physically with our eyes. We need an electron microscope. In other words, we need to empower our own physical eyes to see the DNA light that made us physical. It is a profound revelation to understand this.
So we're really made of nothing but light.
That's right. Crystallized light. That's it. In a holographic form, meaning we've got these mirror assemblies, these trillions of mirrors that are DNA molecules shining at each other. They're actually looking at each cell. They're communicating through biophotons, exchange of light energy between each other. But when you do it trillions of times and you do it with such intelligence, you get a physical form manifestation, whether it's a plant, whether it's an animal, or whether it's a human being. And therefore, we cannot die. We just return to the field of biophoton light, and we recrystallize our body into an astral body, a spiritual body that's the same physical form as this body, as my friend George showed me.
And what a way to tie that all back together again. My goodness, you've got this all figured out. At least I think that you have wonderful insights and wonderful research, and it's just so amazing to think about the macrocosm reflecting the microcosm and vice versa, and as well how that plays into our expanding Christ consciousness. So as we honor Jesus this weekend and as we honor what he came to teach us, which is love, let's talk a little bit about the Christ consciousness and how that played into his ministry then and how it seems to be coming true now.
Well, yes, you know, and the key element, again, is love. And what is love? You had mentioned this idea of oneness with John Lennon and some of the wonderful things that the Beatles themselves have done to give us a new way of looking at peace and connectivity and relationship to other nations, etc. And I got to say this blew my mind when I heard you talk about John Lennon. I just, for the first time maybe in 30 years, just reordered the White Album of the Beatles this week for on a CD format. And what I think that means is I really believe there's going to be a revolution in consciousness like the 60s coming back in the summer of 2008. I really see the young folks in college campuses marching again. I really see people coming out of their shell. I think it's going to be a really wonderful 2008 presidential election in the United States. So I just want to throw that
too.
I want to throw that in because I'm a nonpartisan. I don't lean left or right. I come to the center. Whoever captures my centeredness will get my vote, whoever that might be at the time. But the point is, again, what you're talking about, love is the answer. Love makes the world go round, and love makes the world stop the wheel of time. And what I mean by this is if you get into that state of consciousness that is all accepting, all knowing, it's really the idea of all loving. In other words, you feel so connected to everyone and everything. They are part of you. And this oneness comes into play when you want to get into the altered state of mind called trance. Trance is the unification of the left and right brain hemispheres through the pineal gland. The pineal gland or the pineal gland. And the pineal gland is what the ancients like Rene Descartes and the Renaissance period called the seat of the soul. So we have this gland in the shape of a pine cone in the center of our brain. If you do draw a line between our ears and top dead center and the top of our skull, you'll come to the pineal gland. That pineal gland is a switch. It manufactures dimethyltryptamine. DMT is connected with serotonin and with melatonin, and they're all tryptamines. And what that means is they are compounds that regulate waking and sleep cycles as well as our connection between inner and outer space. So when we look outside, we have a certain dose level of serotonin, melatonin, and DMT. And when we dream and hallucinate and have third eye open visions, as I did, we have a different dose level of dimethyltryptamine in particular. This has been proven, by the way, by Rick Strassman, MD, psychiatrist at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine, in his wonderful book called DMT, the Spirit Molecule.
Wow.
Now, let me tie this into the season. And I'm working with Rick Strassman right now, by the way, in forming and helping him promote his Cottonwood Research Foundation, which is going to go forward with the next level of medical research to prove this powerful hallucinogen, DMT, can be put to good use in the psychiatric treatment of folks and beyond into the spiritual evolution of mankind. It is just tremendous work.
Oh, that sounds phenomenal. Maybe you can tell me about that.
Yes, and at my blog site, if you go to my website, you'll see I just put up a banner called Cottonwood Research Foundation. There's a click on that banner, and you'll go to Rick Strassman's website in New Mexico, and you will see what this is about. A lot of folks are getting on board with this. A lot of professional people that I deal with are really going out to promote and fund Dr. Rick Strassman's work.
I would like to see some research on that to assist people that are struggling with mental illness in natural ways instead of all the drugs that they're filling these people
exactly.
up with.
Exactly. We want to really just
so
nail
much
it
more
down.
Distorted.
Yes. And let me bring this exciting idea here to kind of a focal point. The pineal gland is in the shape of a pine cone. Now, if you go to Google and Google quart of the pine, you will see there's a huge bronze pine cone statue at the center of the Vatican courtyard. And if you look at the staff that the Pope himself uses, there's a pine cone on top of that and integrated into the design of that staff. It goes on and on like that, Mark. So I can think of 50 examples of where these pine cones have surfaced in art, and it's about the pineal gland. The ancients were giving this in every way they could. And the consciousness, the higher level consciousness that is always trying to break through into our level of existence, is always trying to raise these symbols back to awareness for us. And to me, that was phenomenal. When I realized that there was this pine cone that's been sitting for 1,800 years, this bronze pine cone at the Vatican, that blew my mind.
Now, I think that's fascinating because I was not aware of that, and I know a lot about the art at the Vatican, and I've been to the Vatican, and I did not know about that. And it doesn't surprise me because they generally have tuned into all the intuitive vehicles. They know all the secret stuff about the royal bloodline of Jesus, and they've suppressed everything. But they are magicians. They are master magicians at this kind of thing. So that does not surprise me.
And the thing that I try to look at, too, is that I think a lot of us harbor strong feelings about this, about the particular way that things were handled through the Crusades and the Inquisitions and all this, and absolutely there's a lot going on there. But we have to realize when we're dealing, in my opinion, when we're seeing people represent a particular church or group or even scientists representing a particular discipline that we don't agree with, we got to realize we may be harboring feelings that we need to resolve and get over. That, you know, I feel like I've probably been tortured and killed several times over by the Catholic Church, for example. But I'm not afraid of them, and I have tremendous respect for them. But I realize, see, they're working through things at their level that I need to work through at my level. I have a Scottish background, okay? The Scots are notorious. We are very thick-headed folks. We don't follow the trends cycle of folks.
I can completely relate to this, and we could go on for another hour, but our show is coming to an end, John. And we have to finish with a little bit of music. So, I completely understand what you're saying about the Catholic tradition, because I was raised Catholic, and though not now, I find there's a lot of resonance of truth within the tradition, but they've taken a lot out of it and kind of hijacked Jesus, I think, too.
That's right. They watered it down to the point. That's right.
Yeah.
But now it's going to come back.
Yeah, you know, they've got some fascinating stuff going, and their rituals and traditions, especially around Easter, are so powerful and beautiful. So there's good and bad in every tradition, you know, but there's a lot of distortion in main religion, and John Lennon says that, and he wants to say thank you for mentioning him and his work with the Beatles, too. So he's coming through a little bit at the end here. I want to refer our listeners to your website again and your fine book, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century, at www.johnjharper. Thank you all for listening to the Peaceful Planet Show, and we'll be back again next week with some wonderful music. And we want to close out with the song Remarkable Nebulae by Bob Murray, as inspired from John Lennon. And I want to say many blessings to all of our listeners and to you as well, John. It was really a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much.
God bless. All right, thank you. God bless.